Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for David Inge. Glad you could listen today. During this hour of the show, we will be talking about the university's role and commitment to public service. And presumably, we may be talking about the University of Illinois, but by extension, probably to higher education in general. What is higher education's obligations in doing public service? It's one of the pillars we say that higher education is supposed to stand on, and we will talk about that during this hour, what that means, and so forth. Our guest is someone who has vast experience in higher education. Stanley Levy was, until 1996, Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs at the University of Illinois. He served for over 28 years on this campus, and he's also a professor of educational organization and leadership. He established a wide range of programs here at the University of Illinois, among them Lunch Bunch, Lead for Illinois, the Student Leadership Awards, and the Office of Volunteer Programs, just a few things that he was involved in creating. He also redesigned the delivery of student health care at McKinley Health Center, the central health care resource here on campus for students. And we're glad to have him with us during this hour to talk about these issues. He will also be giving the University YMCA's Friday Forum Lecture this coming Friday, November 2nd, at the University YMCA, 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign. That is free and open to the public. It is a series of weekly lectures held at the Y on a variety of topics. So he'll be speaking at noon this coming Friday, and we have him here with us during this hour, Focus 580. As we talk, if you would like to join the conversation, your questions and comments on the topic are welcome. All you have to do is call us around Champaign-Urbana. The number is 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around Illinois or Indiana. Parts of the other states are signal travels or via the Internet. Anywhere in the U.S., use our toll-free line, and that is 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, anytime during this hour, 333-WILL. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-WILL. Stan Levy, good morning.
Good morning, Jack. My pleasure to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Let me just start by asking you to talk about the university's role and commitment to public service. Please define what that means.
Well, you know, that gets to be a difficult and elusive topic because it's subject to a wide array of interpretations. But as you alluded in the introduction, public service is one of the three legs of the stool of colleges and universities, in particular, of course, the land-grant institutions. Mm-hmm. What does service mean? Well, that's where it gets very interesting, because it's clear that when the Morrill Acts were passed over 100 years ago, it was clear that the service intended was related to primarily, at least at that point, the agricultural communities and helping there, though not exclusively so. The early interpretations were that that may be the initial focus, but that wasn't the whole thing. But the land-grant institutions were expected to serve the needs of the community, agricultural and mechanic arts, and help and nurture the development of these kinds of enterprises. Over the course of time, the co-op extension program emerged, and what you have in cooperative extension these days are nutrition programs and youth programs and agricultural programs and horticultural programs, varying around from state to state, certainly, but giving widespread opportunities for the university to take that which it learns in the classroom and that which it develops in its research laboratories in agriculture and transmit these to the general populace. So that service function starts out in perhaps that direction, but then it gets expanded in other areas, public health activities, work with schools, interactions with youth groups, urban development programs. It's widespread. It's probably true of almost every college or university in the country. It's especially an obligation, of course, to the public institutions, because our obligation is to serve those public needs and the public good. And that, of course, gets subject to pretty broad interpretations.
You mentioned the Morrill Act and the land-grant institutions, and probably a lot of people know this, but maybe some people don't, that in the 1860s, was it, the Morrill Act?
67, I think was the first one.
The land-grant refers to the granting of land for higher education institutions at the time. Illinois Industrial College was the name of the U of I.
Well, that was the U of I at that point.
Right? Yeah. And the needs for development at that time were very, very different, since agriculture was still, well, not brand new, but it was still developing in the state.
Right. And it was, you know, terribly difficult for farmers to get organized in terms of how do you best utilize the land and what kinds of crops to grow, what kind, and it's evolved over time, the rotation of crops, the development of better seed. But I'm sure in 140 years ago, the effort was really just helping farmers get started and beginning to help them understand mechanical equipment, which, of course, didn't exist and slowly came on the scene, how to use this mechanical equipment in today's world, how to use it safely, because these monstrous machines can be deadly if you're not very careful. You know, you don't stick your hand into them to clear them out, the augers and so forth. So it really began at the simplest level of getting things slowly underway and has evolved into much more sophisticated interactions between universities and the agricultural community.
Was there provision in the establishment of this notion for the evolution of needs and the way the university would, you know, evolve essentially to address those needs?
I think it probably was implicit. Yeah. It's not certainly explicit in the Act, but it certainly has evolved over time that universities' relationships with its communities have changed as societal needs have changed. For example, as we got into World War I and World War II, just as the rest of society went to war, so to speak, to the universities, and universities became very active in engaging in research activities that helped the war effort. The notable examples, the ones everyone's familiar with, so to speak, is MIT and the University of Chicago. And that's where the university took its knowledge industry, if you will, and applied it to national needs as then defined. That has been true, I think, through most of our history, where the universities have adapted their social service, public service functions to the needs of the society as it existed at that time.
So the model essentially was the university is a laboratory of research, developing technology and techniques and tools that people can use, and then also serving as a sort of educational outreach arm to spread that knowledge.
I certainly would agree with that. Yeah. I mean, that's been, you know, the jargon word is dissemination
right.
in other aspects of the institution, but it certainly was true in the most land-grant institutions had something called their experiment stations in engineering and agriculture, which is where a lot of the applied research was done, and it was easy to move that applied research from those kinds of enterprises into the delivery systems as they existed.
There is another aspect of this that relates to citizenship and something that liberal arts colleges in particular saw themselves as not just training people in particular technologies or specialties, but broadly educating citizens. So that this is very much a Jeffersonian concept,
right.
So that people would be able to participate in a democratic society.
Well, and that's kind of the aspect of the public service mission of the university that energizes me, because I think this is the possibilities of taking advantage and utilizing the opportunities of college students within the academic community and helping them learn more about the society in which they are living, in which they will work. It's something we have missed more often than we have capitalized upon, in a sense of not availing ourselves of the opportunity to help young people in colleges and universities understand what's going on out there and become more productive citizens, more sensitive citizens, more alert to the diversity of the society at large, and the whole notion of empowerment, not necessarily the empowerment that's associated with political activists on political issues, but helping people to, if you will, take advantage of their own personal strengths, utilize them for growth, et cetera. I was just reading an article this morning in a magazine that was discussing a garden that has been developed in Seattle by a group of people connected with the University of Washington, where the garden is the locus of activity for homeless young people, teenagers, in which they've encouraged them to come, work in this garden, grow food. They grow the food. They then sell it at a farmer's market near the UW campus. And along the way, There's an interaction with university people in helping these, their dropouts, their runaways, their whatevers, begin to assert themselves more productively. And part of it stems from planting something in the ground, watching it grow, nurturing it to its maturity, and then selling it as part of the developmental process for them to be able to become more empowered themselves. And it becomes the possibility for the university to contribute to a very unique population. That happened to be just a simple volunteering activity, but it wouldn't take much to move it into the arena that does excite me, and that is a so-called service learning, or the opportunity to take the classroom, move it into the community, work within the community, take the work within the community back into the classroom, and bridge the two. And in that bridging, you have all kinds of really tremendous things can emerge. And that's what I think, in part, the university should be spending considerable more effort on.
I don't want to make too much of war metaphors, but it does seem that the university has been sort of a battleground in, you know, in the sense that some people, I mean, some people feel that the university needs to be involved in economic development, developing technology, in developing the future leaders of the country. In other words, an educated elite. And then there's this sense that, you know, let's reach the lowest common denominator and lift them up and make them citizens and make them able to participate in the economy and the democracy. And so that you have engineering getting a lot of resources and English not getting much at all, for example.
Yeah, that's a constant stress factor. You know, it goes back a long ways, Jack. The golden rule, he or she who has the gold rules. And too frequently, that has been the determinant, more frequently than not, of the research agenda and the activity agenda of the university. And it has varied over time. You and I are senior enough. I'm senior to you, but I think you remember the agony and the anger of the military-industrial complex arguments of not too many years ago. And what was good for General Motors was not necessarily good for the US of A, but for a long time we sort of believed that that was good for them. And that's not the case necessarily. And it does lead to distortions. There are ways in which the English departments of the world can make the same qualitative contribution to improvement of life and well-being as engineering departments. They're not always going to have the same kind of productive economic output. But to a certain extent, I guess my own conviction is that economic development per se has always been a part of the university's mission, but it's subsumed under one of the things we do under the service mission. It isn't the only thing we do. It's just one of those things. And if you're not talking about, put it differently, if the faculty in agriculture is working to improve the quality of seed or a product so that you have better yields and higher quality, if that is an economic development, I don't know what is, because it does a lot of other things. It's food, it's nutrition, but it's also economic. So I think that what we need to be careful about and wiser about is how we can incorporate into the service functions of the institution and the developmental service issues with students, English and philosophy. And I don't exclude them. I mean, I think there are ample ways in which you can take the what you are doing in the classroom and what you are learning in the classroom about human behavior, human conduct, human needs, the realities of relationships, and translate them into what's going on in the world out there and build some of these bridges.
We're talking during this hour of Focus 580 with Stan Levy. He's a former Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs at the University of Illinois, and he will be giving the Friday Forum lecture this Friday, and we're talking about some of the things that he will address at that point, and that is the university's role and commitment to public service. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free anywhere else, 800-222. 9455. In some ways, it seems that the university is many different things. In some ways, we are training people in technical skills and maybe how to do research so that research and technology can proceed. At the same time, as we were just discussing, we're training people in just general orientation to human civilization and the skills that we all need as human beings to, you know, be able to read and understand history and so forth. And I think that there's some tensions between those.
There have always been those yeah. tensions, and I don't think they will ever totally disappear. Yeah. But I think these tensions can be minimized if you begin to think of the university as having a more inclusive obligation in the nurturing of the talent that is within it. That's not only the student talent, but the faculty talent. Mm. You know, universities, you know, many of us have grown up in the notion that it was an ivory tower and the cloistered, removed from society and so forth. And we should not interact. And I think our society has moved in a different direction that says, that's fine as far as it goes, but on the other hand, there is an obligation and a need, and I guess I'd almost go obligation more than need, for the university to become engaged with the community around it and work within those communities, working with and for the betterment of both. Mm-hmm. This is not a lose-lose. This is a win-win. It seems to me that as the university becomes involved in communities and helping communities do the things that they are best able to do using the knowledge base that we have on the campus, it's more than just, here, we're giving this to you, and you go do something with it. And it certainly isn't the paternalistic, we know what's good for you, which has been characteristic of an awful lot of university community engagements. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're smart, we're educated, we have fancy titles and degrees, we know what you people down there need, and we're going to come in and we're going to be the do-gooders and we're going to do this good work. And then, of course, the grant runs out and we pull out.
Right.
And you know, there's just thousands of hundreds of thousands for all I know, but that's happened all too frequently. That's not what we're talking about. That's mm-hmm. not what I'm interested in. I'm sure over the course of years you've had folks from the East St. Louis Project. SLARP is probably one of the most notable and highly regarded university community interactions anywhere in the country. It's been a model for a very long time. University has done very good work there. And it's the plus is that is so incredibly successful. The minus is, why haven't there been replications of that in other areas? Now, I'm led to believe there's an attempt to get something started locally, mm-hmm. Champaign-Urbana, but we've been talking about that, I think, for quite a while.
Yeah.
But if we have learned anything from the East St. Louis experience, it is that universities can do high-quality work in communities that empowers communities, allows them to attain and garner respect and be self-sustaining. At the same time, we're learning and we're growing. And of course, the vehicle for a lot of this is the students.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are I'm not so sure I always like the word, but these are sometimes transformative experiences for students. Notre Dame for years. Now, granted, there's an ethos to Notre Dame that we don't have that's religious, but Notre Dame for many years has had a Notre Dame in the City program where they were very conscious and deliberate in saying we have a privileged array of students here. Most come from very good, solid, affluent backgrounds, et cetera, et cetera. And as they discovered in some work that was done many years ago, the kids in the suburbs had never been downtown. So what Notre Dame started doing quite a while ago was to provide opportunities over Christmas and spring break, I think, but particularly over Christmas, for students in a particular metropolitan area to go into an inner city parish for 3 or 4 days where they slept in the parish hall and they ate the food there and they worked with the priests and the staff in the community. And then when they got back to South Bend after this 4 or 5 days experience, they would meet in small groups with faculty talking about it. What did you see? What did you learn? How do you apply it? Blah, blah, blah. And they were always quite delighted mm-hmm. with, you know, it clearly had an impact, because if you've grown up in an affluent suburb, you may go into the city for something, but you certainly don't go into a lot of the neighborhoods. And it was important to them to make sure their students came away with this kind of insightful understanding of that there's another world out there. And then the conversation with their faculty was, what can I do about it? What can I learn from it? What can I teach? How can I become involved meaningfully in social change or improvement of a lot of the people, et cetera? And it might be just simply volunteering and going in, doing good work and leaving. There's nothing wrong with that. And others would be much more engaged in actual, you know, hands-on, continuous involvement in working with the people in their communities in achieving some kind of upward step in whatever way it was desired.
Mm-hmm. We have talked a little bit about the East St. Louis Project over the years. Can you describe that a little bit more? Because I think a lot of people may still not be familiar. Well, I'm not asking you to be a spokesman.
I'm not. Let me be very clear about that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think what's notable about the East St. Louis Project, it's a program where the university went in, identified and worked with community people on their turf, on their terms, listening to them and their needs and saying, what is it you'd like to do? And how can we be helpful? And then bringing to bear whatever resources we had to help them do what it is they wanted to do for themselves to improve mm-hmm. their neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So it's done everything from literally, figuratively cleaning up a neighborhood and creating a playground to creating a farmer's market, which provided jobs as well as income in the neighborhood as well as quality food. It was working within the structures that existed rather than imposing some structure from outside. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was persuaded that it clearly was empowerment. It taught the people working with the university faculty and students learn how to do things that they had never been able to do before and achieve certain community goals that had been eluding them. And it's been an ongoing relationship. It isn't as if, Urbana folk came in, stayed there for 6 months and pulled out.
Yeah. It's been some years.
Yeah, I guess 8 or 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure it's close to that.
Yeah.
And that's what, in part, is what makes it so remarkable, because so often, Jack, these kinds of programs have been finite. Sarcastically, I said, when the grant runs out, the college or the university pulls out. Mm-hmm. And there are some across the nation where there have been these continuous involvements. Now, one could say, well, how long do you stay? Well, you stay until the people say, we're able to do all of these things ourselves. We appreciate what you've done for us. We now have the skills, the techniques, the knowledge, the insight, whatever, to kind of move on our own. Mm-hmm. And you can then, progress elsewhere.
Yeah. You used the word engagement earlier when you talked about these things. It's a two-way street.
Absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely. It really is, there's no hierarchical structure. There's no status differential. Everybody's getting their feet wet. Everybody's getting their hands dirty. And you're working together. And you're listening. Too often we talk of partnerships, it's not a 50-50 partnerships, it's a 70-30 partnership. Still a partnership, meets the technical definition of what's a partnership. But I think what the notion of engagement really means that you really are relatively on the same plane with them, with the people that you're working with. You're doing things with them, not for them. It's the simplistic, do you work for somebody or do you work with somebody? And if you say, I work for somebody, there's a status hierarchical differentiation. But one of my mentors way back when was very annoyed at me the first time I said to somebody in his hearing, I work for so-and-so, and he just snapped at me. He really did, and he really believed it. I didn't work for him. I worked with him. And I didn't understand it. I experienced it ultimately. And I think that's what we're talking here. The engagement really means it's hands-on, it's involved, it's as equals, it's with a good ear. You're listening. You know, we don't do very well sometimes listening to what people are telling us, whether it's our kids at home or the folks at work or in these kinds of community interactions.
Very good point. Well, we're a little past our midpoint here with Stan Levy, former Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs at the University of Illinois, and we're talking about the range of things that universities do in terms of public service. Stan Levy was involved in many of those things for many years at the U of I. And if you'd like to join our conversation, once again, the phone number is 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I wonder if I could ask you to talk a little bit about the Office of Volunteer Programs, which you were involved in establishing. You probably wouldn't mind talking about
that. No, not at all. I really, you know, it's one of those things. It was done on my watch, and I was very happily involved in it, but it really wasn't my baby. One of the young man who worked for me at the time, Hank Walter, is the one who really put it together. But it was a partnership effort on our part, I think. It really was an attempt on our part to try and get more effective utilization of students in the community. And we were working at that point with a gentleman who at that point was executive director of United Way of Champaign County, James Vanderklok. And it was one of those things, you know, you're almost literally sitting around at a bar talking over lunch and, you know, kind of how do we build a bridge between the students on campus, United Way, blah, blah, blah. And that sort of grew out of it, the Office of Volunteer Programs. Initially, it was funded 50-50 by United Way of Champaign County, and the other half came from not appropriated funds, but monies that I had raised from alumni and friends of student affairs. And its purpose is to be a beacon, a lightning rod, a vehicle for communication and interaction between students who want to get involved in the community and community agencies who are looking for volunteers and support systems. It has grown considerably. Vice Chancellor Askew has been very supportive of the office, and it now has a pretty healthy budget. When I was around, those are lean years anyway. It was pretty tight little island over there, but it continues to provide a framework for students who want to do things. And it's everything from I've got a few hours free every week and I want to do something, anybody want me, to somebody, an agency saying we've got this big thing we want to do, we want to move offices or whatever, we need grunt labor to help us lug the furniture, and they'll call volunteer programs and they can help to broker groups to do it. They also provide training and information both ways. They're now tied into the web page that for volunteering in the community. So it's been quite an asset.
Yeah, that web resource is quite extensive. It's amazing where people can see what volunteer opportunities there are if they'd like to volunteer, and they can also look for volunteers essentially.
Right. Yeah. And Let me be clear, Jack, that there is a distinction between volunteering and the community service that I'm particularly interested in. Okay. There's nothing wrong with volunteering. Let's be very clear about that. And certainly when I was still in an active administrative role, we were trying to say we have 700 registered organizations on the campus at that time. And doing a little brainstorming, we figured every one of those registered organizations could do something in the community related to their purpose and their mission. And if nothing else, they could do tutoring or they could be soccer coaches. But there was a way for them to become involved in the local community. And at that point, my own thinking was if we could get students to volunteer in the community, they'd have a better understanding about Champaign-Urbana. They'd realize that there are a variety of economic levels in our society. Not everybody is as affluent or as well off as they might have been. It will bring them into contact with students from other cultures. As you well know, Champaign-Urbana is an increasingly diverse community. We have many communities here that weren't here 30 years ago. I mean, when we got here in 1968, there was an African-American community and there's a Caucasian community, and At that point, there was beginning to be some mixing in terms of residences and everything else, but that was it. Well, now we have a very strong Asian community. We have a very large Hispanic community. And students on campus, you know, this is an island. They may take MTD out to Meyer, but it's still an island. And the volunteering that students could do in the schools and the park districts, et cetera, gets them to see there is another world out there and there is a role that they can play. Service learning and some of these other rubrics that are the kind of community service I'm particularly interested in is immersion. But that doesn't denigrate the volunteering, which is a quick in and out.
Yeah. You mentioned the diversity of the community and the students and how that has increased in recent years. I remember a very very powerful experience I had when I was quite young, probably 10 years old or something. It was, I believe, held at the Illini Union. It was an event at which international students were essentially setting up booths and, you know, information about their countries and their cultures and all the aspects of daily life, where they came from. And it was eye-opening because I saw, you know, I met and talked to and got a glimpse of people from Africa, Asia, Indonesia, Europe, South America, Mexico. I mean, all the places from which students come to this campus. And that kind of experience, like I say, had a very powerful effect on me. And it seems that that is the kind of thing that the university can, I mean, it's only one thing, but it can offer the community.
Yeah, the International Fair, as it was called, is a very, very popular program at the Union for, years, generations perhaps. And then, unfortunately, it came apart and fell apart over geopolitics because we started getting, instead of being displays of the culture and the history, you got all kinds of things that were being displayed and the argument, well, that's part of our culture to show these bombed out buildings and so forth and so on. And that's where it all kind of fell apart. But on the other hand, the university today provides, with unfortunately not as much visibility as one might like, evenings of Hispanic music and culture and Asian music and culture, and the different nationality groups on campus will often come together for programs at Folinger or at Smith Music Hall. There still is something at the Y annually of a dinner. It is a marvelous opportunity, but the undergraduate still today, without some sort of push, incentive, or opportunity, undergraduates still stay kind of closed in with the people they are most comfortable with. I mean, it's a normal, natural thing to do as a young person, or even as adults. You hang out with the people with whom you're most comfortable. And those tend to be people of a similar background or whatever, similar persuasion, whatever the persuasion is. And the challenge is how do you get people to cross lines. There's a project at Berkeley many years ago called the Diversity Project, in which the attempt was how do you get students at UC Berkeley to interact across cultural divides? And one of the solutions proposed there by the folks who worked on this project was community service and service learning, the hands-on interactive kind of things in the community. And they also said just in the classroom, when you have break up into small groups, make sure the groups are diverse. That is, don't let all the men from here or the women from there or the Greeks or whatever. Make sure that the groups. And as people from different cultures are placed into environments and opportunities where they need and have to work together to achieve some objective, that enhances the intercultural understanding far more rapidly than lectures and all these impersonal things. It really gets down to the level. I've got to work with this person whose culture, background, tradition, religion, and interests are so very different from mine, but I've got to do it now, and I guess let's have at it. And then they discover, gee, you know, he or she doesn't have horns and blah, blah, blah. And, and you end up with a much more healthy work environment, teaching environment, learning environment.
The whole issue of universities' involvement in handling of diversity has, of course, been very controversial. You mentioned one aspect of it when people started representing, you know, the atrocities that various other cultures have visited upon them. And, you know, this is my culture, one aspect of it. But the other is that you know, I think that Americans have been very conflicted about this concept of the melting pot versus ethnic identity, especially in recent years. And so you have La Casa Cultural Latina, the Asian American Studies has, I believe, their own, you know, headquarters house. Not the studies program. I mean the Asian American students, and so forth. And there is some feeling outside of campus, especially I think, that these it's dangerous to allow people to split up into these camps. And yet the university has made a commitment to acknowledging and supporting people's efforts to understand their own backgrounds, while they also bridge those in in this maybe larger venue.
Well, I guess it's fair to say that it's not necessarily tied to this, that I'm very much in favor of the cultural centers. They achieve a couple of things. One, it's a safe haven for persons of that persuasion. You know, we have it off the campus in the religious foundation. So if your primary identity is your faith, you've got some place to go where you're going to feel comfortable. It's the same principle almost with the Asian American Center and the African American Center, et cetera. And those are perfectly appropriate. The catch is, and the educational issue there, is they cannot be allowed to become isolates. That is, just as you can go in, it seems to me there is a need to reach out. Mm-hmm. So you have things like the Black Chorus that is very important to someone's understanding of African American music, and a lot of us don't know it. You know, you can spin the dials and maybe pick it up on the radio, but there are innumerable opportunities in the life of a university for these cultural centers to be reaching out as the same time as they are the safe havens and the home base for students, and it's very important. You know, the difficulty of a place like the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, it's large. It is both its blessing and its curse. If you want anonymity and you want to be alone, great place to come to school because, you know, nobody's necessarily going to bother with you. On the other hand, if you want support and nurturance and so forth, you sometimes have to look for it. And this campus over history has provided lots of opportunities to do that. The difficulty with the melting pot theory that I grew up with in sociology, it really wasn't quite the case. We weren't really quite the melting pot we once thought we were. So then you got, are we a salad? Or, you know, you had all kinds of new metaphors sought. Service learning, volunteerism, these kinds of projects enable people to cross those lines in meaningful ways. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that through my entire professional career, the only people I ever worked for were white males. That will not be true for either of our children. And you need to be able to learn what it is to interact with people who are not yourself. And some of that is easily done with meaningful service opportunities.
Just a quick reflection on what you were saying about the crossover that does happen amongst these cultural programs. And you mentioned the Black Chorus, which I think is a wonderful, wonderful thing on this campus. My wife actually was a member of the Black Chorus for a while.
Okay.
And she's not African American. Right. So there was a welcoming there as far as anyone else.
And that's very powerful. Yeah. I will have to say that this is a bit of history, but there have been some other groups on this campus that somehow or other, in spite of the increasing diverse nature of the student body, never changed. They remained all white. And I will admit, as when I was a working vice chancellor, I got myself into trouble on more than one occasion by asserting, why is this group still, you know, lily white in a community that wasn't any longer? When I got here, when we came in 1968, at least the impression I had, prior to the fall of 68, there were more black Africans on this campus than there were black Americans. And the 500 program, the EOP program, and folks like Clarence Shelley changed all that. But so when you look at an organization of the campus, the Wumpty Wump Society, and they're all white, there's something going on there that, quote, ain't exactly cricket. Mm-hmm. And somebody needs to move on it. Now, I don't say you force it, but you'd certainly need to find out why in a on a campus where 26 to 28% of the student body right now is not Caucasian or persons of color, how come this group is still all white?
We have just about 10 minutes left with our guest, Stan Levy, retired Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs here at the University of Illinois. He was also for many years Professor of Educational Organization and Leadership. And we're talking about the university's role and commitment to public service. In the time remaining, if you'd like to join us, you better call quick. The number is 333-9455, toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. This whole discussion of diversity, in some ways, it may seem far afield in our discussion of public service, but where I was wanting to get with that is now that we are in a so-called globalized civilization, and it seems so much more important to understand people around the world, whether you know it's the governmental organizations or the cultures, the history, and so forth. I guess the big question for me is, what is the university's role in fostering that understanding? And isn't that also kind of, in a sense, a public service mandate?
Well, in the best of all possible worlds, which this isn't, I'd be very comfortable if two-thirds of the undergraduate student community spent a semester abroad before they graduated. Our world, you know, I'm not saying this to, there's nothing profound about it. Our world has shrunk considerably over the last 40 years, and certainly it's a much smaller world in the notion of globalization and all those issues. I personally believe as a matter of inherent conviction that it is essential that students be provided opportunities, encouraged to explore that world out there around them, you know, not only in Champaign County, but, take a chance and go study abroad. And I'd almost say even the grand tour of the summer is better than never leaving the campus. In my own experiences with students on the campus, it always troubled me how many had never been any further than 200 miles from their hometown. Now, they might have gone down to Florida for spring break, mm-hmm. but that was it, and never been to Canada. Never been to Mexico, and heaven forbid, overseas. So I've always been very supportive of it, and I've been delighted. The campus in the last 5 to 7 years seems to be making much more of an effort to encourage students to study abroad. It's very important. It's important to our society. It's important to them. It's important to our culture. But,
we have a call to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation.
Delighted.
All right. This is a listener in Champaign on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yeah, good morning. I couldn't agree with you more about studying abroad. One of my children recently graduated from a college where something like 80% of the students go off campus. It might be to the Southwest, but mostly it's overseas for a semester. And I think it really gives a different flavor to the college. I wanted to mention two programs locally that started out as a project. One was a project, I think it might be for the course that Lynn Heumann now teaches, which is a service learning, and that's the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. It started in 1977 and is still going. And the other is the Boast Academy, which is a program that was started by a social work and a engineering graduate student. It's now under the College of Life Science with Howard Hughes Medical Institute. And it started as an outreach to minority children who lived in the housing projects on the North End and is now in one of the schools, Kenwood School, where most of the children went. Mm-hmm. And it's an academic after-school program with a science emphasis to help those children stay in school and give them a love of learning and science.
It's interesting that you mentioned the BOST program. When I was vice chancellor, I was approached to help get that off the ground and actually provided some money for a couple of years to help it get going. And then, quite by accident, encountered, a student leader type who was racing from bureaucratic meeting that we were having because he was, quote, teaching science. And then talking with him about it, he ultimately went to medical school. He saw his experience with the BOST program as one of the most significant things he had done at Illinois. And this is a high achiever with a lot of stuff on his resume, but the BOCES program was one of those things that he felt made a difference for him because it brought him into contact meaningfully with young people who really wanted knowledge but, you know, needed help reaching it. So I'm glad you mentioned it. It's a terrific opportunity.
Yeah, and it's still going on, and I work with the program. We can still use volunteers.
always.
But the students that work with us almost universally say that it's been a very meaningful experience. And a lot of education students feel that we've got mostly education and science students mm-hmm. work with us, and they feel it gives them more hands-on experience than they get except for student teaching, and more freedom to try out techniques and stuff than you get when you're doing a whole classroom. So, okay.
All right.
Thanks
a lot for the call. We have just about 2 minutes left, and there's one area I want to ask you to talk briefly about, if you wouldn't mind. In recent years, I mean, we've been talking about all the wonderful things that universities are doing, and there are tremendous programs that are occurring and being supported. There in recent years has been more of an emphasis on economic development and developing technology and technology parks for entrepreneurship. So to, you know, take the research and actually, you know, throw it into the world of you know, free enterprise and so forth, and grants and contracts, especially contracts with corporations that support research and so forth. And it seems to be a direction that all universities are taking or maybe being forced to take by virtue of funding requirements. They need to generate additional funds because, you know, we're always, you know, trying to scrape by, essentially. And I wonder if you feel that there's a danger in that in terms of the orientation of universities toward public service.
Yes. Yeah, that troubles me a great deal. As I mentioned earlier, Jack, it's sort of the golden rule. He or she who has a goal rules. And I think that's what we're having now. You've got governors and legislators saying to public institutions, especially, you got to do this, you got to do that, technology transfer. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, its exclusivity, I think, distorts values. And as you alluded earlier, you know, the money appears to be going in one very definitive direction, and all kinds of other things are being left out. I remember, I've got to dig it out, but I remember a quote attributed to Clark Kerr, the former president of the University of California, who had a very distinguished career in higher education. He said, a great society needs both good philosophers and good plumbers, because without both, neither its theories nor its pipes will hold water. And I think that's what we forget about as we talk about economic development, technology transfer. That's very important. That's important to the economic welfare of the society and so forth. But that is not the whole picture. And we distort what it is we ought to be about when that's all we seem to be talking about. And I confess I do react to the notion that that's the most important thing the university should be doing. Unfortunately, I think, yeah, it's important. But I also think it's probably as important to nurture development of responsible citizenship, responsible participation in the society, civic awareness and civic responsibility, and an insightful understanding of what does it mean to have a diverse culture.
We'll have to leave it there since we're here at the end of our time. I will suggest, though, for you folks listening, if you'd like to hear more from our guest on this topic, he will be giving the University YMCA Friday Forum Lecture this coming Friday, November 2nd, at noon at the University YMCA, 1001 South Wright Street. And that's free and open to the public if you'd like to attend. And to our guest, Dan Levy, thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome, Jack. My pleasure.